Well, good morning. This is Per Fogering with Fight the Empire on KBOO, your radio station. Well, much of the news that's coming from Israel these days, it always seems to start with Hamas firing rockets into Israel. But that's not the beginning of the story. It's a bit like coming into a movie in the middle, trying to figure out what's been going on all this time. So let's look at what happened before that. Back in November 2019, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was indicted and charged with breach of trust, taking bribes, and fraud. He was required to give up all his ministry portfolios except that of Prime Minister. In May 2020, his trial began, and in April of this year, the trial turned to testimony by witnesses. Then the violence began. On April 13th, Israeli police raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque, throwing stun grenades during prayers. They also closed the plaza at Damascus Gate, a popular gathering place for young Palestinians. On April 21st, a mob of Israelis associated with a far-right Lahava party marched through East Jerusalem and attacked Palestinians. On May 3rd, Jewish settlers kicked Palestinians out of their homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. And it was then that Hamas struck back, and that's when our media picked up the story. On May 10th, Hamas fired rockets, and Israel returned the fire. On May 11th, Israel conducted an airstrike. Hamas fired rockets at Tel Aviv, and there was fighting in mixed towns, and an emergency was declared. On May 12th, the U.S. sent an envoy to Netanyahu. On May 13th, Israel massed troops on the Gaza border. On May 15th, Israel made an airstrike at a refugee camp, killed 10 people in one extended family. And on May 16th, Israel destroyed the home of a Hamas leader. So with a full-scale war looming, attention has shifted away from Netanyahu's alleged crimes. And one might ask, did Netanyahu plan it that way? And note, we might note that the violence was instigated by Israelis, the raids on the mosque, the street fighting, and ethnic cleansing in East Jerusalem. According to Israeli writer Akiva Eldar, the violence plays into Netanyahu's hands. Says Eldar, quote, for the past 2 years, Netanyahu has been fighting for his political life with everything he has got. He has been charged with fraud and corruption and is potentially facing a hefty prison sentence if he falls from power. Right now, neither Netanyahu nor his opponents have the votes to form a new government, so he stays in power a while longer. The politicians try to make deals. Meanwhile, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has brought out a resolution to block President Biden's $735 million weapons sale to Israel. She says we should not be sending direct attack weaponry to Prime Minister Netanyahu to prolong this violence. So at least somebody is doing something about it. But President Biden seems to be not quite sure what President Biden is doing. He seems to he's telling Israel to kind of back off, but he doesn't seem to be taking any kind of measures to prevent that. Maybe listeners out there might know more about it. If so, please give us a call. The number to call this show is 503-231-8187. Tell us what you think about what's going on in Israel now, because it could very likely spill over into an all-out Mideast war. Once again, the number is 503-231-8187. This is a listener call-in show, and we welcome hearing from you. People who feel inclined might give us a call or go online and contribute some funding to keep the station going. We've been going on now for more than 50 years with support from the people, from our listeners, and that's how that is kind of that's our business model. We don't depend on advertisers or corporations to fund us. We depend on the people, on our listeners. So once again, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Well, it looks to me, and like a lot of other observers, that the turmoil going on in Israel right now, this is Netanyahu trying to save his, as long as he's conducting this war, he has the support of the Israeli people, grudging or otherwise, and he's sort of safe from being removed from office. Once the fighting stops, then it's like this might be the beginning of the end for Benjamin Netanyahu. Some of the charges against him involve bribery and colluding with one Israeli newspaper to give his support in his plans against another Israeli newspaper. And so this is the way Netanyahu operates. So he has kind of thrown, he has set up a dividing line between people in Israel who want peace, who want to have some kind of ordinary living with the Palestinians, and the people who don't. And I think we know who they are. They're the right-wingers, the ones who storm into East Jerusalem and kick people out of their homes. One question people might answer is, what would you do if some gang came into your home and threw you out into the streets and began living in your house? What would be your reaction? I know what my reaction would be, and it would not be a very peaceful one, but this is something that people should look into their hearts. It's very easy to criticize the Palestinians, but when you look at the entire picture of what's been going on in Israel, you might change your mind. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, the U.S. seems to be backing down in its fight to halt the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. This is what the situation is. Germany needs natural gas. Russia has lots of it and is close by. The easiest and cheapest way to move the gas is by pipeline. But the U.S. The U.S. does not want Germany and Russia to get too close, and the U.S. Also has gas for its own gas for sale at a higher price. And the reason for that is our gas would have to be liquefied by freezing it something like 200 degrees below zero, or some really fantastically low temperature, putting it on tankers, specially equipped tankers, and sending them across the ocean. That's how the U.S. would sell its natural gas to Germany and other European countries. And but the and so that is the so now that the pipeline is almost complete, this pipeline I believe is about 95% complete, going from Russia under the Baltic Sea and reaching Germany, where it can be piped around the rest of Europe. And so I think the U.S. has finally decided to lift these sanctions, because I think the U.S. sees that there's no point in fighting this anymore. It's a it's sort of a deal that it just seemed like a natural natural kind of arrangement to make. Why spend a lot of money on shipping gas across the ocean when you have it close by and be sent in by pipeline? Of course, eventually the natural gas will not be around forever, and the economies, people who run the economies, need to make some kind of plans for what to do when the natural gas is gone. What kind of, because piping in natural gas, even when it's the cheapest way at present, it's not sustainable. It's not going to be around forever. And so you need some kind of an economy that is sustainable, that does, you know, that can be maintained. So if you have any calls, this is a call-in show brought to you by KBOO, your radio station. If you do have a comment, give us a call. Now would be a good time to do it, better now than later on when we're getting near the end of the show, and then there's not much time left to explore the interesting ideas that listeners may want to discuss. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. One question I've always wondered about, can any listener out there tell me what Bitcoin is all about? Apparently it's some kind of a cyber currency, or cryptocurrency they call it, and it's it exists online, and the latest I've heard is that the value of Bitcoin has fallen 30%. Apparently investors are taking a second look at this this kind of currency. This is a an article from where is it from? It's from the Associated Press. Bitcoin, the volatile digital currency that briefly became a $1 trillion market, plunged Wednesday as its month-long slide morphed into a frenzied sell-off. Cryptocurrencies have surged over the past year on a wave of speculative excitement, spurred by famous backers as varied as Elon Musk, Paul Tudor Jones, that gave small a growing crowd of bulls. Let me turn the page here. This gave a small but growing crowd of bullish investors a feeling of inevitability that cryptocurrencies would mature into a significant asset class in their own right. Bitcoin, they wagered, might even fulfill its initial vision and become a legitimate alternative currency. I don't know, does anybody out there have any bitcoins or any kind of cryptocurrencies? Give us a call. Tell us, how do you spend this money? Where does it exist? It would seem to me that anything that's online can be hacked from the outside. It can be, I suppose, it can be hacked. It can be and disappeared. I have heard cases of people's financial accounts online sort of disappearing in a in an instant, and you know, you may talk about as it's always fun to kind of laugh at sort of the misers who hoard their gold in their bank vaults or underground treasuries, but at least you know that that money is there. It's not going to go away overnight. It it takes quite a lot of labor to haul away $1 billion worth of gold out of somebody's basement. But apparently, a hacker can go online, and if that person, if they know what they're doing, they can cause your $1 billion treasury to kind of go poof. And it's gone away from your control into somebody else's control. And it's hard for me to see how an economy can continue when it's based on this sort of currency. It's if anybody has an opinion on that, give us a call. Would you invest in a cryptocurrency if you had money to invest, or would you forego it? We might go back to what's going on in Israel, where Netanyahu has been indicted and charged with crimes of breach of trust, taking bribes, and fraud. And it's pretty clear to some people that that his kind of warlike reaction to Hamas is a kind of a way of taking attention away from his own troubles with crime and embezzlement, and sort of getting Israelis sort of to stand behind him in his warlike maneuvers. One article is the headline is, Israel's turmoil hands political lifeline to embattled Prime Minister Netanyahu. The story goes that Netanyahu is pressing an aggressive campaign against Hamas, targeting its leaders, strategic infrastructure, and military sites to deter the militant group from continuing its attack on Israel. The operation could aid Mr. Netanyahu's other vital goal of staying in power. 1 week earlier, Netanyahu's opponents were poised to unseat him and form a new government, potentially ending the rule of the country's longest-serving leader as he faces corruption trial. But the past 6 days of national turmoil have offered the Israeli Prime Minister a political lifeline. When Arab parties and a right-wing politician pulled out of talks this week to join or back a rival coalition, the threat to unseat Mr. Netanyahu appeared to collapse. So the apparently, from what I gather, the that neither Netanyahu nor his opponents have enough votes in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, to form a government. So you have a lot of bargaining and talking behind the scenes going on, where to get the all-important vote that would put your side over the top. And in the meantime, while this is going on, Netanyahu remains in power, you know, at least for temporarily, until either he forms a government that will last more than a few months, or until his opponents form a government and unseat him. And as these Israeli observers have written, once they do form a government, then Netanyahu may very well go on trial.
Marcos is on the line.
He could get a long prison sentence. So the stakes are very high in Israel, and I think people there know it. Maybe people here do not know it, but
we have Marcos on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Per. I appreciate everything you were saying, and it's good to focus on Netanyahu's political problems. It very much parallels what people were saying about Trump's political problems, that he may want to start a war as a distraction from his own possible criminal vulnerability. His own criminal exposure. But Gideon Levy was on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, just before yours. Mm-hmm. And he went beyond just this being an interest of Netanyahu, that this is consistent with the Israeli radical right, the more extreme Zionism of what they call Eretz Israel. That's an expression that Americans should be familiar with, but we're not, because it's not part of our discourse. Eretz Israel essentially means a greater Israel. That mm-hmm. the borders that we think of as Israel having now, that those borders are seen very much as temporary by your more expansionist Zionists. So ultimately, their project all along has been to annex the West Bank, to annex Gaza, and to claim all of this as part of Israel, that these will no longer be occupied territories. The whole settler movement has simply been a foot in the door to create what they call facts on the ground, that mm-hmm. All these settlements, all these small cities built up on occupied lands that are Jews-only cities, that are rigidly segregated, highways connecting these cities to the larger Israel, highways that are only used by Jews, mm-hmm. by Israeli mm-hmm. Jews. When people call this apartheid, it almost doesn't need to be defined that way. It just operatively is a racist policy, and that the ambition has never been peace in the way that peace might have been described in the Oslo Accords, or peace might be understood in any way that an American casually looking at the situation might think of as peace. Peace has never been the objective. When you want to invade and conquer more land, peace has nothing to do with that.
Well, my question is, I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I think a lot of there are people in Israeli politics, this is their goal, is to somehow have Israel for them, kind of from the Jordan to the sea. and they would like to somehow expel all the Palestinians, but it's really hard for me to see how they do that. I think right now they're trying to do it bit by bit to kind of encourage them to leave and just make it as uncomfortable as possible for Palestinians to stay. But it seems to me like it's a lost cause. It's not going to work. But I don't know. Do you think they can make it work?
Pragmatically, I have no idea. Obviously, yes. What do you do with the millions of people that you're trying to get rid of? Or would they simply be living under Israeli domination without any question about their status, that they would simply be...
Yeah, that would be the fundamental issue there, that that is, if Israel is going to rule over these people, you can't allow them to vote, but then you don't have a democracy anymore either. So go ahead.
Yeah, I cannot answer that. I mean, that's you're not wrong in pointing that out. It's not an insignificant problem that might complicate their ambitions, but it's important just to understand their intentionality, their purpose in all of this. That it's not simply taking a handful of homes in Sheikh Jarrah. It's their larger ambition is everything that is now perceived of as land that Palestinians occupy. They want it all. How they're going to get it? Yeah, you're right. It's hugely problematic. But that the United States be a part of that project, that ultimately that we would be backing this larger land, that never penetrates American discourse. So it's kind of the elephant in the room that no one ever talks about.
Well, we're talking about it here.
We are talking about it here. I'm going to do something that maybe I shouldn't do, which is to touch the third rail of actually discussing Hamas. Because mm-hmm. even progressives that are highly critical of Israel, generally speaking, don't interrogate the idea that Hamas is this violent terrorist organization that is simply evil. In most discourse, people either, when they're criticizing Israel, they basically don't want to address Hamas because, well, you know why. I guess Hamas does pose the greatest military threat to Israelis of any of the Palestinians. Fatah does not really do that. Hamas has rockets, homemade rockets made in people's garages out of scrounged materials. But still, rockets that have killed a dozen Israelis, which
well, I understand the rockets are getting are able to travel further and further. This is something new to me that until recently it seemed like they fall far short of their targets. But maybe this is less true these days.
No, that's you're right. They have upgraded their rocket capabilities apparently. The places are being targeted that previously, I use the word targeting. That's kind of a misnomer because anyone that knows about the rockets knows that they're very hard to control, and that's why they're considered to be a war crime, because once you fire one of these homemade rockets, you just don't know where it's going to come down. Mm-hmm. So there's an element of truth there. Hamas is generally regarded in the American media as having seized control of Gaza. That's the expression that's usually used. They did seize control in the very same way that Donald Trump seized control of the White House back when he did, and back when recently when President Biden assumed control of the White House, he seized power. But the point is, of course, that both Biden and Trump won elections. as did Hamas. But it's very often misrepresented that Hamas.
We're about near the end of our time. So
please.
Anyway, I think you're making a good point. It seems to me that Hamas is, you know, they were elected because they are sort of the only Palestinian group that has put up much resistance to Israeli land grabs. The PLO has kind of acquiesced, or I don't know exactly what they're doing, but Hamas has been fighting back. Most of their rockets have been in reaction to Israeli land grabs, and there is a situation, but it could end. But the thing is that the Hamas striking back also plays in Netanyahu's hands too. So it's a really dicey situation that it seems to me could very quickly descend to all-out war. But I think we're near the, this is about 9:30, and the show is, I want to thank you for your call, and thank you all for listening, and stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.